farm of Max. Yeah.
Good evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here. Thank you for joining us tonight. We have way too much on the agenda here. We're not video streaming tonight. However, you can just use your imagination. Just pretend that you're seeing something on your computer screen. I want to start tonight with this report from the LA Times. Jim Tankersley, who is with the Tribune Washington Bureau. Tribune Company, of course, owns the LA Times. And this is about the inspectors, the drilling inspectors, how they were nothing but a bunch of, no offense to sex workers, but paid prostitutes working for their pimps, who are the oil companies. According to the LA Times, inspectors for offshore oil and gas drilling took unreported gifts from the companies they were supposed to regulate. Oh, my. And they may have falsified inspection reports. No. Really? That's according to the Interior Department's Inspector General. All of this is in a report released today. One inspector completed four safety reviews. Now, let me back up. These are government employees, these inspectors. Guess under whose administration these people came to work. 3, 2, 1. Bah! If you said the Bush crime family, well, you win the cigar. One inspector completed four safety reviews of an offshore platform operator, even as he was negotiating with that operator for a job. Oh, my. Others admitted frequently accepting skeet shooting outings, meals, trips, and college football tickets from the companies they were responsible for overseeing. Now, you know that these are Republican appointees by the very nature of what they were willing to sell their asses for. College football tickets? Skeet shooting outings? Really? In other words, cheesy, two-bit Republican punks. Now, the icing on the cake, to let you know they were really Bush crime family members, is this. Two federal employees admitting to using cocaine and crystal, I love the way the LA Times put this, methamphetamine. Guys, you can call it crystal meth. Oh, never mind. And investigators found several others had used their government's email accounts to spread pornography and racist comments. Acting Inspector General Mary Kendall wrote in the report, you know why she's the acting inspector general? Because the Republicans in the Senate will not confirm her. Acting Inspector General Mary Kendall wrote in the report that she was particularly concerned with what she calls the ease with which federal inspectors move between industry and government. But I thought there were rules against that. The so-called revolving door. Oh, that's right. These are Bush crime family appointees. As one manager is quoted in the report, quote, obviously, we're all oil industry. We're all from the same part of the country. Almost all of our inspectors, have worked for oil companies out on these same platforms. They grew up in the same towns. Some of these people, they've been friends with all their life. They've been with these people since they were kids. They've hunted together. They fished together. Not any longer. They skeet shoot together. They do this all the time. End quote. Now, these are the rat bastards, the filthy rat bastards, charged with inspecting all the plans, all the contingency plans, all the safety operations for companies that are about to go out 30, 40 miles offshore of the United States and start punching holes in the bottom of the goddamn ocean. And these inspectors were bought off for skeet shooting trips. The report investigated alleged impropriety at the Minerals Management Services Lake Charles, Louisiana District Office from 2000 to 2008. It followed up on an earlier report that detailed sex, drug use, and other improprieties among MMS employees in Colorado. And representatives of industry is a representative. And on, I just get so pissed off. And representatives of industries they regulated. And on the criminal conduct of a former MMS official for accepting unreported gifts. It just goes on and on. This is the legacy of the Bush administration. This, remember towards the end of the administration, and if you're a regular listener to this program, you remember we talked about it. Towards the end of the Bush administration, when the Cheney bastards and the Bush bastards decided to really leave a lasting legacy, not just the horrendous debt that they had slammed this country into, not just the constant red ink budget deficits that they had slammed this country into, not just two wars absolutely unnecessary that they had slammed the country into, not just the loss of our honor with the torture that they slammed us into as official government policy. I could go on and on, but why bother? The real legacy were the worms and moles and scum that the Bush crime family inserted into every federal agency as civil service employees before they left office. Political appointees who were converted at the last moment into civil service employees so they could not be fired. This is the Bush crime family. This is what they have done to this country. Dick Cheney, this decaying, filthy, cyborg bastard. This is what he left. This is his legacy. Interior Secretary Ken Salazar installed new strict ethics guidelines at MMS when he took office in 2009. Too late. Way too late. Today, Salazar called this report, quote, deeply disturbing, end quote. And he said he asked Acting Inspector General Mary Kendall to broaden her investigation to include the time since he took office. He wants to know. He said, I appreciate and fully support the Inspector General's strong work to root out the bad apples in MMS. Blah, blah, blah. Now, as we all know, Ken Salazar, like so many people in the Obama administration, are products of corporate America, whether it be the corrupt and filthy investment banking industry that's destroying the country, the corrupt and filthy regulatory agencies that are destroying the country, the corrupt and filthy energy industry that is destroying the country, the corrupt and filthy military appropriations combine that is destroying the country. It doesn't make any difference where these corporate sons of bitches come from. There they are in the Obama administration. But these are political appointees, you see. These came in with Barack Obama. The ones that decided to destroy the Gulf of Mexico, the southeastern coast of the United States, and possibly the whole world are Bush appointees.
Feet.
21 past the hour. Now, that was the LA Times. The New York Times also has their take on this. You know, the fact that it has taken a massive catastrophe, a catastrophe of truly unprecedented proportions that is unfolding right in front of us. We have no idea how this is going to turn out. We have no idea the damage is going to be done. When I saw this video today of this oil seeping now into these marshes, in these breeding grounds, in these estuaries on the South Louisiana coast, and now the dead animals are starting to show up. And the videos that are circulating around now, I think CBS, NBC, they have sent divers down with video cameras to take a look at this stuff. There is no way to know the extent of this damage. It's everything from apocalyptic to just horrendously impossible to deal with. It's going to fall someplace between those two extremes, though. It's not going to be, oh, well, we had an oil spill. Let's go sop it up. Okay, everything cleaned up. Oh, good. How are the birdies and fishies doing? Oh, good. They're all swimming? All right. I lost a few porpoises? Oh, well, they're not really fish. A massive catastrophe like this to discover a very simple reality. And anybody who denies this reality is blind, a fool, a moron, I don't know, a Republican, a teabagger. Pick one. And that reality is that we exist now in a system of predatory capitalism that is so vile, that is so corrupt, that is so filthy, that has divided this country into the top 0.1% and the bottom 99.9% of everybody else. And that top 0.1%, they have it all. They've got everything. They have the best of this and the best of that. And we're nothing. If we get blown up, if we die in a mine collapse, if we starve to death, if we lose our houses, if we lose everything we own, if we wind up committing suicide, it doesn't make any difference to these people. Predatory capitalism is devouring the United States. So what are we doing about it? Nothing! Nothing. Shame. Shame on us. Federal regulators responsible for oversight of drilling in the Gulf of Mexico allowed industry officials years to fill in their own inspection reports in pencil. And then turned them over to the regulators who traced over them in ink before submitting the reports to the agency. Think about that. The report, which describes inappropriate behavior by the staff of MMS from 2005 to 2007, who was president then? Who ran this country then? Also found that inspectors had accepted meals, tickets, sporting events, gifts from at least one oil company while they were overseeing the industry. Yada, 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 yada. I like this line. Good old New York Times. Although there is no evidence that those events played a role in the Deepwater Horizon oil spill, the report offers further evidence of what many critics of the Minerals Management Service have described as a culture of lax oversight and cozy ties to industry. Many critics? How about anybody with more than a third grade education? In mid-2008, a Minerals Agency employee conducted four inspections on drilling platforms when he was also negotiating a job with the company he was supposed to. Blah, 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 blah. An inspector from Lake Charles' office admitted to investigators he used crystal meth. Blah, 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 blah. It just goes on and on. On and on and on. Interior Secretary Ken Salazar said he found the report, quote, deeply disturbing. Oh, deeply disturbing? That's it? Deeply disturbing? Deeply disturbing is, I don't know, is when you find out that there are a couple of parking tickets you didn't pay and your car has been booted. That's deeply disturbing. Oh, God, how am I going to get to the important appointment? No, this is not deeply disturbing. Secretary Salazar, this is one of the most monumental crimes committed by an industry against the people of the United States in our history. So, Mr. Salazar, why don't you fire everybody? Every one of these weasel, vermin bastards, why don't you fire them all? Why don't you start with a clean slate, Mr. Salazar? After you fire them all, second step, resign your ass. Leave. Get out, because you're as corrupt as any cheesy $60,000 a year inspector. Get out! Oh, what am I saying? Distract us from the facts. It's about oil. It's about oil. It's about greed. It's about greed. It's about rich white men getting richer. It's about fear. It's about fear. And control. And control. Of those barrels of black gold. Another war where we never really say what we're fighting for. It's easy to pretend we're defending our native soil. Put it in the headlines. I want to see it in big lights. Hello, it's about oil.
Cleaning up America one flying monkey at a time. It's more Mike Malloy. I would walk 10 miles on my hands and knees. Ain't no doubt about it, baby, it's you I am the bees. I wrestle with a lion and a grizzly bear. It's my life, baby, but I don't care. Ain't that tough enough? Ain't that tough enough?
It's about 25 before the hour. It's time, once again, for Uncle Mike's Story Corner. We are going to do Uncle Mike's Story Corner momentarily. Uncle Mike's Story Corner is brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. Isn't that interesting? Uncle Mike's Story Corner. On this lovely spring evening, here in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains. Maybe it's a lovely spring evening where you are, unless you live in the Gulf Coast area of the United States. Tonight's Uncle Mike Story Corner is written by Frank Pope. It has been an hour since our sport fishing boat started streaking through the freshly oil-soaked marshes of Pasalutre. But we're still only halfway through the slick, 18 miles out and the stink of oil is everywhere. Rashes of red-brown sludge are smeared across vast swaths. Between them a swell rendered faintly psychedelic with rainbow-colored swirls. Cutting the engines, we slide to a stop near rig 313. We're not supposed to be in this restricted zone, but other than the dispersant spraying aircraft passing overhead, there's no one to see us. Despite the thick oil, we've seen only two cleanup boats out of the 1,150 that the response claims to have on site. One was broken down, and the other was towing it. Skimming and burning are the most visible elements of the cleanup operation, and that's no accident. Over the past few days, it's become clear that far more oil is gushing from the seabed than BP had admitted. Oil has been prevented from reaching the surface by dispersants injected into the flow some 5,000 feet below, but is spreading through the midwater in vast, dilute plumes. Along with the marine toxicologist Susan Shaw of the Marine Environmental Research Institute, I've come to peer into the hidden side of the Deepwater Horizon disaster. Wreathed in neoprene and with Vaseline coating the exposed skin around our faces, we slip into the clear water in the lee of the boat. Beneath the mats of radioactive-looking, excrement-colored sludge are smaller globs of congealed oil. Taking a cautious, shallow breath through my snorkel, I head downwards. 12 meters under, the specks of sludge are smaller, but they are everywhere. Among the specks are those of a different hue. These are wisps of drifting plankton, the eggs and larvae of fish, and the microscopic plants and animals that form the base of almost all marine food webs. Any plankton-eating fish would now have trouble distinguishing food from poison, let alone the larger filter feeders. On shore, small landfalls of the same sludge have started to cause panic among locals as they coat the marshes. Here, just a few feet beneath the surface, a much bigger disaster is unfolding in slow motion. Back on the boat, Dr. Shaw says, quote, "This is terrible. Terrible. The situation in the water column is horrible all the way down. Combined with the dispersants, the toxic effect of the oil will be far worse for sea life. It's death in the ocean from the top to the bottom." Dispersants contain particular evils. Core Exit 9527, used extensively by BP despite it being toxic enough to be banned in British waters, contains two butoxethanol, a compound that ruptures red blood cells in whatever eats it. Its replacement, Core Exit 9500, contains petroleum solvents and other components that can damage membranes and cause chemical pneumonia if aspirated into the lungs following ingestion. But what worries Dr. Shaw most is the long-term potential for toxic chemicals to build up in the food chain. She says, quote, "There are hundreds of organic compounds in oil, including toxic solvents and polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, that can cause cancer in animals and people. In this respect, light, sweet crude is more toxic than the heavy stuff. It's not only the acute effects, the loss of whole niches in the food web, it's also the problems we will see with future generations, especially in top predators." End quote. When a gap in the slick opens, I dive on one of the huge steel legs of the rig. Swirling around it are dozens of some of the biggest fish I've seen in nearly 20 years of diving. Huge cobia, amberjack, mangrove snapper, and barracuda thrive on the shelter provided by the big structures, creating some of the most sought-after game fishing in the United States. Our skipper claimed that he'd hosted 3 world record-breaking catches last year. Dr. Henry Bart, a fish biologist at Louisiana's Tulane University, told me later, "They'll be healthy enough now, but it's just a matter of time." Cobia feed on upper water column species. The oil is going to magnify up through the food chain. What happens to marine species in the dark, unseen waters below us is less certain. In the Gulf, the depths are better known than almost anywhere in the world, for the oil industry has to show what exists on the seabed before any drilling can begin. This, along with an ongoing census of marine life, has helped to reveal that life within seabed sediments is astoundingly varied. A pod of sperm whales resides off New Orleans and is believed to be dining on giant squid. These ultimately depend on the tiny specks of life that are slowly being poisoned at the surface. What happens next? No one can say for sure. Another episode of Uncle Mike's Story Corner. Tonight's episode written by Frank Pope and lifted with no changes whatsoever from the Times of the United Kingdom. The Obama administration came to BP's defense on Monday. You're aware of that, right? Rejecting, once again, any federal takeover of the response to this horror. Coast Guard Commandant Thad Allen defended BP's actions at a White House press conference yesterday, calling BP's actions, quote, rational, end quote. The admiral said that he could not see any reason why the federal government should take over the response to the oil spill. Admiral Allen said that he was, quote, satisfied with the coordination that is going on and that BP is exhausting every technical response to the leak, end quote. He added that, quote, there's no reason to make a change to the official response to the spill. When asked to clarify whether BP or the U.S. government was in charge of the cleanup, Allen said that the two were working in, quote, partnership, end quote. BP, meanwhile, continues spraying the highly toxic Corexit 9500 dispersant into the Gulf of Mexico despite a government order instructing it to stop. BP has refused to comply with a separate demand issued by the government that it turn over all scientific data regarding the spill in its possession. Rick Steiner, an oil spill expert in marine conservation, has said, quote, BP basically told the EPA no in very certain terms, end quote. Steiner said he found numerous inaccuracies in BP's response to a government demand that it provide recommendations for alternative dispersants. When asked how the government will respond to BP's defiance, Admiral Allen defended BP by saying its chosen dispersant, quote, is an order of magnitude, end quote, less toxic than the oil itself. Steiner, the civilian expert on this, marine conservationist, he said, quote, this bypasses the real issue, namely that dispersants actually make oil more toxic. The higher toxicity of dispersed oil is backed up by numerous studies, including one that concluded unequivocally that dispersed oils were more toxic than crude. End quote.
Tomorrow, water the down presser. They heat the bread up
had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
It's 10 before the hour. You know what we're talking about again this evening. When asked how the government will respond to BP's defiance about spraying these dispersants, the commandant of the Coast Guard, Thad Allen, said that, the dispersant is less toxic than the oil. And Rick Steiner, the oil spill expert and marine conservationist, said, despite everything the Obama administration is saying, you're doing a hell of a job, Brownie. It's disgusting, said Steiner. That was, of course, the praise Bush gave to his FEMA agency head, Michael Brown, for the government's catastrophic response to Katrina in 2005. And as Steiner says, quote, this is no different than Bush's response to Katrina, end quote. Meanwhile, BP announced that it is siphoning much less oil from the spill than it had previously announced. These murderous bastards said it was removing 5,000 barrels of oil a day, every day, by means of a tube inserted into the broken marine riser pipe. But yesterday reduced the estimate down to 1,000 barrels a day. And the sons of bitches are still lying. Of course they are. White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs insisted that the White House would not back down from its plans to promote offshore oil drilling. In response to reporters' questions about Obama's continued support for the program, Gibbs said only that the White House has formed a panel to advise the president on ways to prevent future offshore drilling spills. There is only one way, Mr. Gibbs, and that is to stop drilling. Period. From Mike in Connecticut, he writes, Mike, I've been listening to you since your first day on the now-defunct Air America. During all that time, you've been screaming about how the Bush crime family would utterly destroy this country. I used to think this comment was a little over the top, but now it seems that everywhere I look, I see total annihilation of every single aspect of what used to make this country worth living in. And now, my most precious area of concern, the environment. It's now in the process of being forever lost to this oil spill and climate change. Everything has indeed been lost because of Bush, with no end in sight. Can we ever come back from this? Mike, not with our system of government the way it is. Mike, we cannot. It doesn't make any difference who the president is. I do not see a candidate anywhere on the horizon to be president of the United States who will not be an absolute whore for corporate America. No offense to sex workers who sell their bodies. The whores in the White House are selling the entire country. I don't see anyone. No one. I thought Barack Obama was going to be that person. I knew Hillary Clinton wouldn't. But I fooled myself. Will we come back from this? No, of course not. Not as long as you're alive, Mike. I don't know how old you are. Let's say you're 30. No, you will not see a time when the estuaries and marshes of South Louisiana will be the way they were 6 weeks ago. You will not live that long. I damn sure won't. My daughter, who's approaching six this summer, possibly. Although by the time she would reach the age where she might want to take a trip to the marshlands of Louisiana, there may be other requirements in order to walk outside here on planet Earth, like suits to guard against radiation and breathing apparatus to make sure that you get at least a modicum of oxygen into your lungs. Joe writes, Mike, instead of holding a boot on the neck of BP, we need to string a noose around them and kick the chair out from underneath. Unfortunately, our government won't hold BP accountable. and likely will pass the cleanup costs to taxpayers. Another corporation gets away with murder. Yeah, and that's been the point and the underlying theme of this program, as blunt and as uneducated as it is. I don't quote great philosophers on this program. I don't let my eyes roll up in my head and start talking about secret this and look, here's a conspiracy there. I don't prance around with a metaphorical chalkboard and try to show you the connections between this, that, and the other. It's just been pretty straightforward, basic, bottom line, high school graduate stuff. Corporate America is destroying this country. Capitalism is ending. It's ending the way of life that we thought we had become accustomed to. Why is not every single liberal talk show host, and I don't know, maybe they are, or progressive, or somebody calls themselves a Democrat, pounding that theme? Pounding it. What are they afraid of? Sure, Bush caused this. He's the one that pulled the trigger. Capitalism loaded the gun. So here we are. Will it change? Mike wants to know. Will we recover from this? And the answer is, of course not. Of course not. As long as we live in a system where corporations, as our great Supreme Court just decided a couple of months ago, corporations have the same freedom of speech privileges as human beings, for God's sake. As long as we live in a society where capitalism and corporatism dominates, do you have to ask the question, will we recover from this? Of course not. This is just one more example. It's one more event. It's one more systematic destruction of what we thought we were pretty secure in having. You remember, what do they call it? The American way of life? Remember that? Some more. I'm not getting a whole lot of emails tonight, either in support of or opposition to the stuff we're sharing with you tonight. There's just some very poignant and ass-kicking stuff being written by bloggers. Like this, and it adds something that you just don't get, we don't get, I don't get from this crappy-ass corporate media. Yeah, Anderson Cooper tries, I guess. Mac McClellan, blogging from Mother Jones. He's at Elmer's Island Wildlife Refuge off the coast of Louisiana. He says it looks worse than I imagined, even after all the warnings. Pools of oil, black and deep, stretch down the beach. When cleanup workers drag their rakes along an already cleaned patch of sand, more auburn crude oozes up from under the surface. Beneath the surface lie slimy, washed-up globules that, one worker says, are so big you could park a car on them. It's Saturday, May 22nd, a month after the BP spill. I've been trying to get to Elmer's Island for the past 2 days. I've been stymied at every turn by Jefferson Parish Sheriff's deputies brought in to supplement the local police force of Grand Isle, a 300-year-old settlement here at the very southern tip of Louisiana. I'm just 7 miles long and so narrow in some spots that you can see from the Gulf side to the inland side. Grand Isle is all new clapboard and vinyl-sided bungalows since Katrina, but still scrappy, population 1,500. Multiply that by 8 in tourist season. It's also home to the only route to Elmer's Island Wildlife Refuge, a barrier island to the west. I arrived on Thursday with my former University of New Orleans lit professor, John Haslett. A tandem kayak is strapped to his Toyota. At the turn to Elmer's Island Road, a deputy flags us down. Can't go to Elmer's. And he's just doing what they told me to do. We continue on to Grand Isle Beach, where toddlers splash in the surf. Only after I've stepped on a blob in a blob of crude do I realize that the sheen on the waves and the blackness covering a little blue heron from the neck down is oil. The next day, cops drive up and down Grand Isle Beach, explicitly telling tourists, it's still open. Just stay out of the water. There are pools of oil on the beach. Dolphins crest just offshore. A 50-something couple, southern Louisianians, tell me this kind of thing happened all the time when they were kids. They swam in rubber suits when it got bad and it was no big deal. They just hope this doesn't mean we'll stop drilling. The blockade to Elmer's is now 4 cop cars strong. As we pull up, deputies start bawling us out. All media need to go to the Grand Isle Community Center, where a BP Information Center sign now hangs out front. Grand Isle residents are not amused by the beach closings. Inside, a couple of Times-Picayune newspaper reporters circle BP representative Barbara Martin, who tells them if they want passage to Elmer's Wildlife Refuge, they have to get it from another BP FLAC, Urban Lip. Grand Isle Beach is closed too, she adds. When we inform the Times-Picayune reporters otherwise, she asks Dr. Haslett if he's a reporter. He says, no. She says, good. She doesn't ask me. We tell her that deputies were just yelling at us, and she seems truly upset. For one, she's married to a Jefferson Parish Sheriff's deputy. For another, quote, we don't need more of a black eye than we already have. We say, but it wasn't BP that was yelling at us, it was Sheriff's Office. She says, yeah, I know, but we have a very strong relationship. What do you mean, I ask? You have a lot of sway over the Sheriff's Office? Oh, yeah. How much? A lot. When I tell Barbara I am a reporter, she stalks off and says, you're not talking to me. And then she comes back and hugs me and says she would just play it. I tell her I don't understand why I can't see Elmer's Island unless I'm escorted by BP. She tells me BP's in charge because, quote, it's BP's oil. But it's not BP's land, I tell her. She answers, but BP's liable if anything happens. So you're saying it's a safety precaution? Yeah, you don't want that oil getting into your pores. But there are tourists and residents walking around in it across the street. Well, the mayor decides which beaches are closed. So I call the Grand Isle Police requesting a press liaison, only to get routed to voicemail for Melanie with BP. I call the police back and ask why they gave me a number for BP. They blame the fire chief. I reach the fire chief. Why did the police give me a number for BP, I ask. Well, that's the number they gave us. Who? BP? When I tell Chief Aubrey Chason that I would like to get a comment on Barbara's intimations and my experience so far that BP's running the show. And he says he'll meet me in a parking lot. He pulls in, rolls down the window of his maroon Crown Victoria and tells me that I can't trust the government or big corporations. When everyone saw the oil coming in as clear as day, several days before that, BP insisted it was red tide, algae. Chief Chason says he's half Indian and grew up here and just wants to protect the land. When I tell him BP says the island side of the island, or the inland side of the island, is clean, he spits. They're effing liars. There's oil over there. It's already all up through the pass. The spill workers staying at my motel later tell me they've been specifically instructed by BP not to talk to any media, but they're pissed because BP tried to tell them that the crude they were swimming around in to move an oil containment boon was red tide, dishwashing liquid runoff, or mud. The next morning at breakfast, the word at Sarah's restaurant is that the island will have to be shut down. The smell of oil was so strong last night, one lady had to shut all her windows and turn on her AC. If her asthma keeps up like this, she'll need to go on her breathing machine tonight, she says. Local workers make $10 an hour cleaning up the same beach again and again. I finally corralled Irvin Lip, who drives me and a few wire photographers out to Elmer's. The shoreline is packed with men in hats and gum boots and bright blue or white shirts. Nearly all are African Americans, all hired from around New Orleans. They tell me they've been standing in these exact same spots for 3 days. It's breathtakingly hot. They rake the oil and sand into big piles. Other workers collect the piles into big plastic bags, and still other workers take them to a plant where the sand is separated and sent to a hazardous waste dump, and the oil goes on for processing. Then the tide comes in with more oil, and everybody starts all over again. $10 an hour, 12 hours a day. When I joke with one worker that he should pocket the solid globs of oil he's digging up to show me how far beneath the sand they go, he stops dead and asks me if BP is still trying to use the oil they all collect. I knew it, he says. Another leans on his rake to ask me, have they at least shut off the oil out there yet? He randomly picks three spots in a 3-foot-wide expanse of sand that he's already raked clean, and he drops his rake in an inch deeper to show me how the oil bubbles up from underneath. He can't count how many times he's raked the same spot in the 33 hours he's worked it since Thursday. One thing he's sure of, he says, and that's he'll be standing right here tomorrow, and the next day, and the next. The hour. Now, you know what's coming, I think tomorrow is what is referred to as a top kill maneuver to choke off this volcano of oil. There, BP is going to try to choke the gusher with heavy drilling mud and cement. Now, this so-called top kill procedure has been used above ground, but has never, ever, 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 ever been tried a mile under the surface of the ocean. The top kill procedure could also make the leak worse. Engineers were doing at least 12 hours of diagnostic tests today, checking on five different spots on the well's five-story blowout preventer to make sure it can withstand the heavy force of the mud. If there's a weak spot in there, a weak spot in the five-story blowout preventer, a weak spot could blow under the pressure, causing a brand new leak. And the mud also could tear a new hole in the leaking well pipe. Do you understand this? If this doesn't work. And this is, they get one shot. They get one chance. Well, they hear today, some BP exec said they have at least a 60 or 70% chance of success. 60 or 70%. A whole flotilla of rigs and barges and other heavy machinery are floating out there with a stockpile of some 50,000 barrels of this heavy mud. It's a manufactured substance that resembles clay. And it was Tony Hayward, BP's CEO, who said the chances of this succeeding were 60 to 70%. A BP senior vice president, Kent Wells, said the procedure could be delayed or scuttled. If they have any doubts towards, well, I guess they've already made the decision now. It's about 9:25 in that particular time zone. And Kent Wells said it could take anywhere from a few hours to 2 days to determine whether the top kill was working. In an area slightly smaller than the size of Greece is now closed to fishing. I hate to use the word heartbreaking because that doesn't get it. But I don't have another one. It's heartbreaking to see read or occasionally see the videos of some of the stories, the personal stories of people who've been working out of this area, the fishing community, whether they're shrimpers or oystermen or lobstermen, crabs, it doesn't make any difference. For generations, literally for generations. And the members of, or the family members of the, 15 people that were killed in the initial explosion, there was a memorial service today. It's almost like they didn't exist. You notice that? You notice how there is only talk about the gusher and the destruction and the possible environmental collapse and the loop current and the Gulf Stream taking this stuff all the way back to Britain. How many times have you heard anything at all on this program or anywhere else about the 15, was it 15? See, I don't even know the number, the 15 people who were murdered by BP. And this is in addition to the ones that were murdered by BP a couple of years ago out in Texas. BP murders anything in its path, people, ecological systems, environmental structures. They just murder it. They don't care. Just kill it. But BP is no different from any corporation or from any aspect of capitalism. If it gets in the way, kill it. Kill it. Murder it. Get it out of the way.
Big birds flying across the sky.
you don't have to. It's More Mike Malloy.
We were young together. We were on the ball. We did not believe in the writing on the wall. We did our best work in the dark. We did our thinking on the
It's 25 before the hour. NBC News was reporting a little while ago that the top kill procedure that BP was going to try tomorrow morning has been delayed. And also, I have this from Reuters. BP says it may have to delay or abandon its planned attempt to plug the oil well with a method known as Top Kill. It was scheduled for Wednesday after being delayed already several times. Reuters reports that BP is under increasing pressure from Barack Obama's administration to contain the spill. Executives have stressed that the procedure has never been attempted at such depth and the chance of success is only 60 to 70%. Jesus Christ. Well, we don't know yet, do we? The thing I don't understand is why these people are still these people being the BP executives, why they're still walking around and why the glorious and wonderful United States of America has not assumed complete control. We can do anything, right? Hey, we can put a man on the moon! Why? You know the answer, of course. You know why we haven't done anything. Well, in the first place, we haven't done anything because the extraction of oil is still in the hands of privateers, pirate bastards, people who couldn't care less about the damage done, rather than that key industry being in the hands of the government. See, with that industry in the hands of the government, by God, if something like this were to happen, well, we'd have the United States and Navy down there. We'd have the best minds possible working on it, right? Governor Piyush Jindal. Governor of Louisiana, that poor bastard, wasn't so long ago that he was saying that Washington and big government was the root of all our problems. A couple of months ago, he said, in the end, it comes down to an honest and fundamental disagreement about the proper role of government. We oppose the National Democrats' view that says the way to strengthen our country is to increase dependence on government. We believe the way to strengthen our country is to restrain spending in Washington and empower individuals and small businesses to grow our economy and create jobs. That was then. And now, during a press conference yesterday with Homeland Security Secretary Napolitano, Interior Secretary Ken Salazar, Piyush Jindal said, quote, we have been frustrated with the disjointed effort to date that has too often meant too little, too late to stop the oil from hitting our coast. BP is the responsible party, but we need the federal government to make sure they're held accountable and that they're indeed responsible. Our way of life depends on it. End quote. So Piyush hates dependence on the federal government. It's just that Louisiana's whole way of life depends on the federal government. You hate him? Well, Piyush, why don't you just give them all the finger and go handle this yourself? I mean, just work something out. Your state is just chock-a-block with the oil industry. They have polluted damn near everything in Louisiana. I mean, there still is a fishing industry out there, but, who knows what people have been eating with those old bivalves that come out of those marshes around Louisiana, right? But Piyush, my goodness, you sound like you're expecting the federal government to come down and do something. What? Come on, buddy. You teabagger freaks believe in government staying out of everything, right? Huh? What is, anybody know what, Sarah Palin has been saying about this? Well, how is she blaming it on Barack Obama? I'm sure she is. Drill, baby, drill. Kill, baby, kill. Steve Pizzo writes, so let me get this straight. If I'm caught with a pound of pot in the trunk of my car, I get arrested and the car gets confiscated by the feds and sold at public auction. If I injure or kill someone driving drunk, I get arrested, lose my driving privileges, and get sued, blued, and tattooed, too. If I'm sober as a judge who drive like a maniac and kill somebody, I get arrested and charged with reckless homicide. And if convicted, I get sent to prison as just another murderer. Not intending to kill someone is not a defense against the charge of reckless homicide. So, why isn't someone arresting BP executives and seizing BP assets in the United States? Just asking. Here's some facts to chew on. I'm no lawyer. I don't even play one. But I dare to say that some enterprising attorney general could easily bring charges of felonious recklessness against BP, Transocean, Halliburton. Is BP too big to fail or just too big to jail? Memo to Attorney General Holder. Hey, now that you've decided you can't or just won't prosecute AIG officials, your desk is clear for other matters. How about it, Eric? Got any balls? Steve. On May 10th, BP said it had already spent $350 million as a result of the Deepwater Horizon accident. By contrast, in the first 3 months of this year, BP made $93 million per day in pure profit. That doesn't include the huge salaries and perks of its executives that are considered costs, not profits. Thus, BP spent what might seem to many people to be a big number on the accident, $350 million, but it's only equivalent to 4 days of pure profit for BP. BP has a market value of $152.6 billion. J.P. Morgan Chase Bank owns almost 30% of BP's common stock. BP is the largest producer of offshore oil drilling in the Gulf of Mexico. It goes on and on. Unless there's an asset seizure, unless the United States government pulls a Hugo Chavez and nationalizes these bastards. And places those funds in a trust to provide for full compensation and relief for the harmed people and the damaged environment. BP and its execs will avoid real responsibility to remedy the suffering and damage caused by the reckless and greedy search for super profits. In fact, if BP and Big Oil is left untouched by government intervention on this, the whole Deepwater catastrophe could turn out to be a source of more profits for Big Oil. A Citigroup analyst report states, quote, reaction to the Gulf of Mexico oil leak is a buying opportunity. Yeah, goddamn right. Let's go, boys. Let's buy some of that BP stock and let's make some money here. Who wrote about it? Disaster capitalism? Doesn't mean a thing, does it? Hey, here's a money-making deal out there. Let's go, boys. Yeah. Is that enough for tonight? Is that it? We got other stuff here. President Obama is sending federal troops to the U.S.-Mexico border. Got a report from Prairie 2. Oh, here's one. How about this? This is from Kelly, who writes, Mike, in a furious attempt to be positive about all this, I just ran across this article from May 5th, which now seems prophetic to me. in an interview with Carl Fairman, a staff member of the University of Colorado Registrar's Office, first reported on May 5th by the Denver Post. Fairman suggested we should all meditate and try to visualize that the oil valve is, quote, functioning and is working and closing, end quote. Visualize. A deep water mining expert at the Colorado School of Mines, Dwayne Burgoyne, said in response to Fairman's suggestion that he has, quote, never heard of such an attempt to stop an oil spill or any other kind of mechanical failure, end quote. Trying to be polite, he added that he is, quote, unfamiliar with the telekinetic potential of meditation, end quote. With that being said, Burgoyne suggested that the meditators, quote, focus their visualization efforts on a process called sanding out, which can happen when the unconstrained flow of oil weakens the rock around the well bore. The rock can break apart and enter the well as sand, which eventually blocks the oil leak. If the meditators are seeking a common image upon which to focus, he said, I suggest they visualize tiny cracks spreading in the rock. Well, thanks, Kelly. Visualization, all right. Before the hour, have you got your monitor on out there? Anderson Cooper is shooting live from Port Fourchon, Louisiana. And they were just talking with a guy down there who apparently is a fisherman from a fisherman family. And what he had to say was pretty damn scary. It just, but you know, what's scary at this point, you know? What's scary at this point? Let's take some of this just for a second here. Let's break in on Anderson Cooper's program.
They're just started to get some people canceling hotel reservations, and a lot of folks in New Orleans want to get the message out that the city of New Orleans is doing fine, that there's not impact there, that there's no reason to cancel hotel reservations in the city of New Orleans, that, you know, the restaurants are open, the food is great. I was just there. I spent the weekend there 2 weeks ago when I was doing the Tulane commencement, and the city is back and alive, and they need people to come. There's no reason people should cancel vacations to
New
Orleans.
That sentiment stretches all the way to Apalachicola, Florida.
Right.
You're hearing a lot of these folks up and down the Gulf Coast saying, you know, don't give up on us yet.
Yeah. Guys, appreciate the reporting. David Mattingly at Lavendera, thanks so much. A lot more ahead on this edition of 360. We're live from the Gulf. We'll be here tomorrow as well.
All right. Now, CNN is reporting that the top kill attempt will be made tomorrow. And understand that BP will show this live on where? Going to be on CNN or the video? I'm sure that CNN will pick up the video feed. You could. Do we still have the link up on our site? Okay, you can get it. MikeMalloy.com. I'm sure you can get all over the place. But I'm also relatively sure that CNN will be carrying this live in the morning. BP was going to try to deep six the video feed, and I think it was Ed Markey, a Democrat from Massachusetts, who raised holy hell, and BP backed down. You know, here's another thing I don't quite get. Capitalism itself is yes, it's run by killers, but they're killers almost by default. I don't think the capitalists set out to kill unless they're taking over another country or starting a war. But in a situation like this, if the deaths of workers or civilians or people in the vicinity to these disasters do occur, that's seen as collateral damage. But I don't think BP sets out to murder people. If it happens, it happens. But the underlying truth about the people who the top grade capitalists or the corporatists is that they are cowards. They are gutless bastards. They hide behind PR flacks and spokespeople and rote responses. Even the guys from BP, the CEO of BP or the COO, I'm not sure who the guy is, who have been out there, who have left BP's headquarters, I guess, in England, and have come to the Louisiana coast. Even they are cowards. They just keep moving ahead. Their goal is profits. And again, if people die, if ecological systems are destroyed, it's, oh, gee, we're sorry. Got to keep moving, though. Got to keep making the profit. You know, we got shareholders to answer to. But as soon as there's some pushback, these cowardly bastards turn tail and run like scared rabbits. You ever notice that? What are they going to do? Hire Blackwater to come and defend them? I mean, what happens if, let's fantasize, if the President of the United States were to get the head of BP on the phone and say, I don't care how you do it, you've got 24 hours to stop this. Now, if he would have done this a month ago, not now. Now, well, he could still do it now, but, and if at the end of that 24 hours, Mr. BP CEO, it hasn't stopped, I will be sending as much of the of our Navy as I can get my hands on down to the Gulf, and we will stop this son of a bitch if we have to drop a couple of torpedoes in it.
Well, if you do that, sir, you run the risk of making it worse.
Well, we'll find out, won't we, when they drop the torpedoes. A, B, we're going to seize your worldwide assets. Everything you own is now ours until this is settled. Every single asset of BP now belongs to the United States government until we can put a dollar figure on what you people have done. Has that happened? No, there's certain round. Well, BP will certainly take care of legitimate claims against our company when this is all over. You know, when we get the gusher stopped and we start cleaning up. Of course, we got 100,000 people out there. We take ads in New York Times. Just look at New York Times. Look at our ad. How do you like this ad? Isn't this a big-ass ad? We've been running that for a couple, 3 days now. Look at this ad. It's a whole full page. You know how much this cost us? Well, okay, not that much. Maybe what it costs one of our executives to spend a couple of weeks in a resort somewhere. But, you know, we did buy it. And if you look at the ad in New York Times, it tells you we're just humping and jumping to get this taken care of. Why, hell yeah, we are. Meanwhile, if y'all want to come out and take a look, you're going to have to get past our security people. Well, why not send in the U.S. Navy with a couple of squads of Marines up on the deck of... I don't know. It doesn't have to be an aircraft carrier, just a destroyer. And just go in and say, okay, get out of the way. 7 past the hour. Welcome back. By the way, did you know that after half a century, we may be facing another Korean War? You aware that what happened today? I think it was today. North Korea has severed all ties with South Korea, including communications, you know, phone lines and internet, not internet, but whatever the hell they have. Telegraph, jungle drums, I don't know. It is North Korea. You ever see those pictures of, it's a picture of the entire Earth taken at night, which is impossible unless you, put a couple of different exposures together to show the whole planet dark. And you look at areas of the globe that are way lit up and areas that are just totally black. For example, the Sahara Desert. Take a look at Africa and the Sahara, that swath across North Central Africa is just pitch black. And you look at North Korea, and it's like there's not a candle on there. It's a strange country. They issued a statement today that says, "The Committee for the Peaceful Reunification of Korea formally declares that from now on it will put into force the resolute measures to totally freeze the inter-Korean relations, totally abrogate the agreement on non-aggression between the North and the South, and completely halt the inter-Korean cooperation." The newsreader who was reporting this on Korean television said that if this deliberate provocation continued, the North would put into force practical military measures. The deliberate provocation is a report, an international report that blamed North Korea for sinking a South Korean naval vessel on 26 March, which killed 46 South Korean soldiers. So this international investigation provided in the report what it said was irrefutable proof. And, of course, the North Koreans say, "That is not proof. That is something put together by a cheap gang of international criminals. And we do not recognize it. As a matter of fact, now we're going to just cut all ties because you bastards have been talking to us just a little bit too much." Right, and so Hillary Clinton is on her way there. Oh, good. Now you got to keep in mind that North and South Korea are still at war. The only thing that was signed in 1953 was an armistice. So here we are, 58, 60, how many years is that? 57 years? 57 years ago, an armistice was signed with Kim Il-Crazy's father, who was the dear leader. Now, this other guy is the dear psychopath. And apparently this incident was started so that Kim Il-Crazy could show the generals who want to cut his throat in the North Korean military that he's still in power, so his son, one of his sons, can become the next leader. Bob writes, "It's not just the drilling platforms that are a danger in the Gulf of Mexico. There are about 43,000 miles of oil and gas pipelines on the bottom of the Gulf, and any one of them could spring a leak at any time, covering a huge area. In fact, there are plans to create a new pipeline called Bigfoot, which would be 1,000 feet deeper than the Deepwater Horizon oil well that is currently threatening the entire Gulf. The government seems perfectly happy to have millions of gallons of oil flowing all over the place at the bottom of the Gulf, and apparently doesn't care if there are accidents or earthquakes." Oh, they must care. There's just nothing they can do about it because we are a nation of corporations. We are the worst nightmare of capitalism. We are there. where corporations run things. Corporations elect people to make sure that when things are run, they are run in a way that satisfies the corporations. And that any kind of gambling that the capitalists want to do is okay when if the cards fall differently from how the capitalists want them to fall, then the people, the proles, are expected to pick up the cost. And we do, because our government is run and has been for a fairly long time by corporatists, by capitalists. We are occasionally thrown a bone and told, good dog, good dog. But what we are seeing, what we've been seeing for the past month, is a perfect example of perfect capitalism. You might say, well, Mike, it's not perfect. Christ, they're destroying everything. No. Capitalism is perfect when it operates in a manner of total disregard. If accidents, quote-quote, happen, accidents, quote-quote, happen. If wars are started, wars are started. If people die, people die. What? What? What is untoward about that? Of course. I mean, these guys are out here on a drilling platform, Malloy. What the hell do you expect? Saddam Hussein was a dictator. What do you expect? Afghanistan needs to be able to send their girls to school. What do you expect? We're America. God damn it. Land of the free and home of the brave. We're just bringing peace, love, and freedom, Afshamer, Rabbi Afshamer. President Obama will send 1,200 National Guard troops to help secure U.S.-Mexico border. According to sources, Representative Gabrielle Giffords, Democrat of Arizona, said in a statement that the administration would announce the deployments later in the day Tuesday. And they surely did, didn't they? The National Guard troops, who are not trained in law enforcement, of course, and it would be in violation of the Posse Comitatus Act if they did try to arrest people. The military doesn't arrest people. The military shoots people. That's what the military is trained to do. National Guard troops will work on intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance support, analysis, and training, and support efforts blocking drug trafficking. What does that mean, blocking drug trafficking? The troops will temporarily supplement Border Patrol agents until Customs and Border Patrol can recruit and train additional officers and agents to serve on the border. Ooh. Homeland Security and Pentagon officials have been jousting over the possible National Guard deployment. For the better part of a year, Pentagon officials worried about perceptions that the U.S. was militarizing the border and did not want Guard troops to perform law enforcement duties. Well, I don't think they will be performing law enforcement duties. How can they? They're not duly sworn officers of the law. They are soldiers. They're designed to, when called upon, kill people and break things up. Because that's what war is about. It's not about rebuilding nations. It's not about sending little girls in Afghanistan to school. The military is about smashing things and killing people. Because in military conflict, usually whoever smashes the most things and kills the most people emerges the winner. And there is no second place in warfare. There's only winning.
end your day screaming with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Prairie 2 writes, government doesn't work, but there sure is money in it. World markets were down 3% or more Tuesday. That's today. And Germany is poised to widen its ban on the naked short selling of stocks. Naked refers to the selling of bets on stocks that you don't own or have access to, as opposed to normal short selling, where you bet on stocks you actually own. And this amounts to a kind of insurance called losses against losses. Before Reagan, anything like naked short selling was called fraud, on par with bank robbing. Now derivatives of this type are the backbone of the financial services industry. The Dow opened down 200 points and stayed there most of the day until having a last-minute rally. I'll bet a Federal Reserve note to... I'd bet a Federal Reserve note to a trillion in naked shorts that this so-called rally was market manipulation by the Wall Street banks to try to ward off any talk of a crackdown on their practices. You need to keep in mind that the big banks are posting billions in losses on banking operations each month, but still show a net profit in the billions from trading operations. If forced to operate like legitimate banks, their bonuses would be right out the window for years at best. In all likelihood, none of them would even be solvent if they were forced to eat their losses. President Obama met with Senate Republicans for the first time in well over a year, and one Republican described the meeting as forceful. The reason given for the visit was to try to line up support for various reform legislation before the break. Some Republicans didn't care for somebody like Obama putting them on the spot. Senator Pat Roberts, Republican of Kansas, told reporters he needs to take a Valium before he comes in and talks to Republicans. He's pretty thin-skinned. And Senator Sam Brownback, Republican of Kansas, described the meeting as testy. Obama is also reported to have clashed with Bob Corker over the financial reform bill, and with McCain, who didn't like it when Obama reminded him that Obama's approach to immigration closely resembles McCain's from 3 years ago. No word if Obama raised the very real problem of Republicans still holding up hundreds of Obama's sub-cabinet appointments, with most not even having had committee hearings. This keeps much of the government in the hands of embedded Bush appointees that were converted to civil service jobs in a sort of scorched earth policy as the armies of darkness retreated from Washington post-election. In fact, ever since the fanatical rule of the Reaganites, who greatly expanded the federal government, loading it up with revolving door corporate types and party hacks, there are few people in government who aren't beholden to the Republican Party or corporate interests. The only agency Clinton made any effort to reform was FEMA, and Bush made short work of that by putting a hack of a horse lawyer in charge, or a heck of a horse lawyer in charge. When conservatives say government doesn't work, they mean they make sure it doesn't work, except for them. Prairie2.com. Well, see, there you go. See, Prairie 2 will tell you. Much of the government is in the hands of embedded Bush appointees who were converted to civil service jobs in a sort of scorched earth policy. Yep. I remember that, too, a couple of years ago when word leaked out that all of these vermin, these people who hate America, who hate representative government, the neo-fascists who are just absolutely determined to finally accomplish what Jefferson warned against, and Lincoln and Eisenhower, the complete corporatization of the United States. We are very, very close to it now. We're so close, in fact, that when a corporation decides to murder the Gulf of Mexico, the administration is hamstrung. What to do?
What do we do? Well, I don't know.
Plug the damn hole!
Yeah, you're right, Mr. President. When we get damn good and ready to plug the damn hole, we might plug the damn hole. In the meantime, sit down, Mr. President, and shut up. Or go make war on the North Koreans or something. But so we're there. We're there.
Kind of pisses me off because I can remember over the years so many times what I said on the program whether I was working at Air America. I used to battle Air America. Some of their executives, they didn't like the things I was saying. There wasn't much they could do, but until they fired me. But, you know, I've had this happen many, many times. And it's what pisses me off a little bit, not a lot, because everybody's got, you know, to make a living, but it kind of pisses me off about other progressive talk show hosts who over the years have tried to adopt more of a reasoned approach to the corporatization of this country. And I've been out here acting like, you know, some punk standing on a street corner challenging people to knife fights, you know, for the past 10 years. And, you know, just that kind of what sounds like when you first listen to this program, what the hell's this guy talking about? God damn, where'd they find him? Get him off the radio. He didn't make any sense. Yeah, that's right. I don't, do I? But I hate to see some of this stuff happening. You know, I thought, well, if I start screaming about it and other people start screaming about it, it won't happen. Right.
Life is so complex, so confusing. Everyone's just trying to make ends meet. You can brighten up their day, keep the facts out of their way. Just simplify the complex, repeat, repeat, repeat. Propaganda, propaganda. If you need to change the subject, it's a dandy. If you want to wag the dog, it's like falling off a log, it's so easy.
Before the hour, this is just crossing a couple of the wires, the Bloomberg wire, and well, Shannon Moore up in Alaska is twittering. Is it twittering or tweeting about this? Which is it, Kathy? Tweeting? You can catch her at twitter.com/ShannonMoore, S-H-A-N-N-Y-N. Shannon, S-A-J-N-N-Y-N, Moore. BP is reporting. BP owns about half of the Alyeska pipeline service. And they have had to shut the Trans-Alaska system after a leak of several thousand barrels. The spill occurred at about 10:20 a.m. local time, as Alyeska was testing a fire command system at pump station number 9 near the town of Delta Junction, Alaska, the company said in a statement. During the test, a power failure led a valve to fail, causing oil to drain into a tank that overflowed into a secondary containment area. The leak is estimated up to several thousand barrels, and the containment area can hold as much as 104,000 barrels. No one was injured. Personnel have been evacuated. Alaska North Slope products have had their capacity on the Trans-Alaska system cut to 16% because of the shutdown. The 800-mile pipeline system transports crude from fields in Prudhoe Bay to Valdez, another northernmost ice-free port in the United States. Bill Cochran, a spokesman for BP in Anchorage, referred all questions to Alyeska when contacted by phone. BP Susan in Squim, Washington, says BP owns 47% of that pipeline. She's been talking to some of her friends in Alaska. So if you want to check this out, twitter.com/Shannon, S-H-A-N-N-Y-N, Moore. Well, they're just the gift that keeps on giving, aren't they? Huh? BP? Now the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. Well, nothing can go wrong with that. I mean, come on. That's a pipeline. That's okay. We're going to need that oil because we're going to... go to war with North Korea again. Well, not war. It'll be a police island. A what? A police island. Say it again. It'll be a police island. Oh, a police action. Oh, I see. What, the United Nations. Yeah, well, it's going to be... I think South Korea is presenting all of this evidence to the UN. Also from Susan, I know that the BP gusher is a disturbing subject, but there are a lot of nuances to this whole thing. Take the fishermen, for example. I lived in Alaska 20 years ago when the Exxon Valdez, with its drunk driving captain, crashed into Bligh Reef and devastated pristine Prince William Sound. And, of course, all the fishermen in the Sound were put completely out of business. So Exxon hired a lot of them for the cleanup, or I guess I should say attempted cleanup, because it never really got cleaned up. Anyway, these folks had no jobs into the foreseeable future, so they all took whatever jobs they could get on the spill, cleaning beaches, and using their boats to ferry workers or lay boom, etc. Some of the boats got totally befouled and ruined from running through the oil, and they lost them, never getting all their money back from Exxon. But the worst damages they suffered were to their health. The oil was bad enough, but the dispersants were far worse. Many of them got their lungs completely wiped out. There was other damage, too, much of it permanent. And now it's happening again. BP is using a dispersant that is so toxic it is outlawed in most countries. And so now already the fishermen of Louisiana are getting sick. And of course, as with the Exxon, the workers are not being given respirators or other protective equipment. Why must these damn corporations constantly repeat their mistakes? It wasn't bad enough that BP killed the Gulf. Why do they have to kill the people that live around it too? Susan in Squim, Washington. Well, I know she didn't mean that line. Why must these corporations constantly repeat their mistakes? These are not mistakes. These are calculated, are the results of calculated decisions. The calculated decision is based on worst-case scenario. How much damage will a blowout cause? How many lives will be lost? Okay, so a bunch of goddamn birds get full of oil. So what? Any people going to be killed? Well, we got about 15, 18 up there on the platform. Well, that's not much. No, it ain't much. All right, let's go ahead. You know, it's calculated decisions that are made by corporate America. Capitalism, when they give any, even a nod to the human beings that they're exploiting, it's usually on a casualty rate, you know, collateral damage. Capitalism doesn't think and plan about protecting their workers. Capitalism doesn't think about, well, now, what are we going to do with these workers when they retire? Oh, I know, let's set up a retirement fund. Yeah, we'll take some of our profits and stick. No. That's not what capitalism does. Not at all. What capitalism does is says, okay, how long can we work these American workers to death? We probably got 40, 50 good years. Then what do we do? Well, then we just pull up stakes and move. How do we do that? Well, here's what the plan is. For the first 30 years, we're going to work in the northern tier of the United States. It's very unionized, but, you know, they got some good workers. Once that gets to the point where we're not making enough money on these poor bastards, then we'll move it to the southern tier of U.S. states. Well, why down there? Well, because they're Christian fundamentalists and conservatives down there, and they don't believe in unions. They don't believe in unions? No, they don't believe in unions. Why not? Oh, they think they're demon-inspired. Really? Where do they get that idea? Well, their preachers tell them that. Ah, okay. So after they move to the south and turn all the mayors and town councils and city councils in the south into a bunch of street whores, no offense to sex workers, competing for the last BJ before they all have to go in for the evening, when they're finished with that and they got all their tax breaks and all their abatements and all this stuff, then what they do is, well, it's time to move. Oh, damn, where are we moving now? Mexico. Yeah. They got a bunch of people down there. Don't you hear? We just passed NAFTA. What's that? That means we can go south of the border and exploit those poor bastards.
Really?
Yeah, only we're really going to stick it to them down there. You know how we, up north we had to pay $28 an hour, and then we came south and it was $14 an hour. Guess what it's going to be south of that border?
I don't know. What?
$2 an hour. You're kidding me!
I'm not.
I ain't. Woohoo! Hot damn! Well, let's go! And then after that, carries on for a while. We're moving again. Where are we moving to? China.
China?
Yep. Why are we moving to China? Well, remember those northern tier states where we paid $28 an hour?
Yeah.
We went south and paid $14?
Yeah.
Then we came to Mexico, $2 an hour?
Yeah.
Guess how much labor costs are in China?
I don't know.
50 cents!
You're kidding.
Well, what about all these people we've left in the northern tier of states across the U.S. and the southern tier of states across the U.S. and now here in Mexico? What about all these people that we have just chewed up and spit out?
Oh, I don't know.
They can get jobs. They can go to work. They can become greeters because we still have a couple of our corporate buddies that haven't left the northern tier of states or the southern tier of states or the Mexican border.
Oh, so that's how it works?
That's how it works. But what about, you know, the United States used to be a pretty up-and-coming country. I mean, all those people moving in the middle class and everything after the Second World War, which worked out pretty good for us, I might add. Didn't mean to kill all them Jews, but, you know, collateral damage again. What happened to the American middle class?
Consider that a thing of the past.
Ah. Well, we're okay, aren't we?
Oh, yeah.
We're just fine. We always have been. We always will be. Oh. Well, thanks. I appreciate it. Appreciate the lesson. I'm glad I'm in that top 1%.
Yes, you are.
We shall return after this break. Stay with us. Before the hour, we have another article by Paul Noel, who writes at Pure Energy Systems News. It's PESN.com, PESN.com. This one is just how big is that gusher in the Gulf of Mexico, and he does some calculations. We got a lot last week. People calculated and sent the numbers in. Based on, listeners, based on what has been reported.
And some of you are very close to what this guy is saying. He says that why am I laughing? Where is it? Oh, here it is. He says that the oil out there now is roughly, what is it? Damn it, where'd it go?
Well, hell, don't tell me I lost it.
It's millions and millions and millions of gallons based on the flow rate of what's coming out. Oh, here it is, what's coming out. Well, it's awfully, it's just a staggering amount of oil that he says is loose in the Gulf now, and it just continues. 441 million gallons of spill has come out of that hole over 30 days. That's 59 million cubic feet. A square mile is 27 million square feet. The area of the slick is now about 12,000 square miles, more or less. This is enough oil to cover one square mile 2.1 feet thick. 441 million gallons. And he uses the, calculates, he gets there by using math. Boo! Jason Leopold, a couple of days ago at Truth Out, was writing about Scott West. If you mention BP to Scott West, two words immediately come to mind, beyond prosecution. West was the special agent in charge at the EPA's Criminal Investigation Division, who had been probing alleged crimes committed by BP during the Ray or Bush years and the company's senior officials in connection with a March 2006 pipeline rupture at the company's Prudhoe Bay operations in Alaska's North Slope that spilled 267,000 gallons of oil across 2 acres of frozen tundra, the second largest spill in Alaska's history, which went undetected for nearly a week. West was confident that the thousands of hours he invested into the criminal investigation would result in felony charges against BP and the company's senior execs, who received advance warnings from dozens of employees who worked at the Prudhoe Bay facility that unless immediate steps were taken to repair the severely corroded pipeline, a disaster was only a matter of time. But what happened was, when he tried to get something done, of course, the Bush administration killed. They transferred him out, sent him someplace else, and told him to keep his goddamn mouth shut. That there was no there, nothing to report. BP is obviously a massive criminal enterprise that that has been operating with protection. You know, you got to wonder who protects whom. Does the executive branch of the U.S. government and its whores, no offense to, sex workers, in Congress protect corporations? Or do the corporations protect the whores, no offense to sex workers, in Congress and the President of the United States? Which way do you think that works? Which way does that flow? The power flows which way? From our political system to the capitalists, or from the capitalists to our political system? Or is there no difference? There's no flow either way because they're one and the same. Could it be that? And what is this little pissant? I just wish Beck would go ahead and get it over with. But what is this pissant saying now? What he's been saying, that there is a socialist takeover of the United States. The socialists, the communists are coming. And it's Barack Obama. He's a communist and a racist. And he's trying to take over everything. And the the droids who sit out there and watch this large white turd operate on Fox News every day, the droids just sit there and go, yeah, yeah, that's right. It's communism. Yeah, it's socialism. That's what he's doing. That's what he's doing. Yeah, yeah. We need more freedom for the corporations and stuff. When the lights go out, I get back. What? I'm going to have to fight you for him? Okay. We can both have him. We're about out of time. Thanks for hanging out tonight. Sorry to continually talk about this. I want to talk about something else. I really do. I'll tell you what. What's tomorrow, Kathy? Wednesday? Yeah. Maybe tomorrow we can... do a lot of phone calls. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.